C1A. Number 1B.
But it says it is the privilege of every child, man and woman. It isn't the duty. It isn't the burden of every child, man and woman. It's the privilege. It's the privilege to go forward. Atonement is privilege to go through the purifying fire. It's a privilege. Because every one of us knows that nothing impure can go into the realm of spirit. And so all that which is not pure enough must be cleansed by the purifying fire. So the purifying fire is a privilege, and the experience of it is a privilege. She says, this command was not intended only for a particular period or for a select number of followers. See how she makes that example of Jesus universal. She doesn't restrict it to a certain period, say to Jesus' period, nor does she restrict it to a certain circle of people, but to all. Not one can escape it. She goes on and says that all men should follow the example of our Master and his apostles. All men. Or, she says, all must sooner or later plant themselves in Christ, the true idea of God. So, this closes that statement of point 9 of atonement, where we just see that each one of us is now faced with the subject of atoning oneself with God, of finding one's complete unity with God. This means that only that can be one with God, which is of the nature of God. And therefore it means that we must lay down, that's the Eucharist, that we must lay down that which is not of the nature of God, because that cannot go into heaven. That's the Eucharist. The atonement always demands the Eucharist. There is no atonement without the Eucharist. There is no unity of purity, of spiritual purity, without laying down materiality. Materiality in its widest and vastest sense of material mindedness, of material substance, thought, of material sense, of material personality, of material life, of material truth, and of material love. Then I have taken another little caption of the divine and the human. It seems that through that whole chapter runs the question of the relationship of the divine and the human. We are in the chapter of Word as the Christ, where the divine comes into the picture and has its claims on the human. And so I took a few headings which just to my mind seems to be important. There may be quite a few others which will talk to you and to your consciousness. The point 10, she shows in this chapter that the divine must be manifest in the human. She says, the divinity of the Christ, the divinity of the Christ was made manifest in the humanity of Jesus. It was made manifest in the humanity of Jesus. Now, in the chapter on prayer, we already have cultured those seven prayers, which are seven faint hues of the seven synonymous terms, seven hues of divinity. And we know now, after having considered that chapter, that they can be made manifest in the humanity of you and me. That seeking God as he is can be made manifest in you and me. And so divinity was made and is being made manifest in the humanity of you and me. And so we begin to unfold and strengthen the divine in us, the kingdom of heaven in us. She says that the Christ, that this Christ or divinity of the man, Jesus, was his divine nature, the godliness which animated him. The divinity of the man Jesus, the divinity of you and me, we have already learned in its first glimpses in the chapter on prayer. And that certainly can be made manifest in you and me if we accept atonement. If we accept that we go forth and exemplify those qualities in what we do and say and feel and act. That's atonement. We are going to exemplify them. She says, the ideal was demonstrated throughout the earthly career of Jesus. Not throughout the spiritual career of Jesus. Throughout the earthly career of Jesus. Now, you and I have all an earthly career. The one has the earthly career of being a businessman, the other the earthly career of being a housewife, the other the earthly career of being a Christian Science practitioner. You may be shocked that I say it's an earthly career, but it is so. So often people think, well, Jesus, he didn't have an earthly career. I have to go to my business and I have to do the washing ups and so on. But Jesus and the Christian Science practitioner, well, he could only be in the spiritual. It's not true. No one had such a hell of a time as Jesus. He went out into the world to meet every claim of the world. Whereas a housewife, perhaps a businesswife, doesn't have to do it in that extent as Jesus did, and as a Christian Science practitioner does. He has a jolly, well, he has an earthly career. He has to live in this world, but not for this world, and not with this world, but against this world. Just as the businessman has to do too, and the housewife has to do too. So there is no difference between a businessman and Jesus' career. They both are an earthly career. But the question is how much the ideal was demonstrated in the earthly career of Jesus, of you and me. And that's what atonement is going to teach us and demand of us, that in the job where we are and whatever we are, we have to face evil. And we have to face experience and not to shun it and to go through them. And the better we go through them and the more we cling to the ideal in order to be able to go through the world and through the earthly career, the higher our demonstration is and the more we work out as one man with God. So let's drop that funny feeling that there are people who have a more material job than the others have. No one of us has such a material job as Jesus had. Every day he was laughed at, ridiculed, persecuted. No one of us has to do that yet. We are in a much happier situation humanly or seen. But Jesus, every day he went out, he was scorned, he was laughed at, he was ridiculed, he was misunderstood, he was persecuted, he was tried and crucified. The world was let loose on him, and he didn't mind it. He even challenged it. So if businessmen and housewives have to do what they call material jobs, let them remind that Jesus could have said the same. But he looked at it from a different standpoint. He looked at it from the standpoint of atonement, where he took those opportunities to disprove that there is any power and in life and intelligence, substance and truth and love in matter and in the world. And that's atonement, coupled with Eucharist. Jesus, Mrs. Eddy says, was the highest earthly representative of God. Earthly representative of God. So we don't have to be sorry about ourselves if we find ourselves to be very earthly representative and to do earthly jobs. Let's do them. We have to do them. Because only in that way we can disprove that there is no life, substance, intelligence, nor truth in matter. Point 11, she says, that divine must overcome the human. The divine must overcome the human at every point. That's our life experience. That's our Eucharist. That we atone with God, that we come nearer and nearer to the divine by Eucharist, by overcoming the human at every point. Point 11, that the human has the ability to reflect the divine. Mrs. Eddy says, Jesus spoke of the human ability to reflect divine power. She says that through the magnitude of his human life, he demonstrated the divine life. Out of the amplitude of his pure affection, he defined love. And with the affluence of truth, he vanquished error. The human is not the mortal. And we have seen that in each one of us, to some extent, we are awakened and awakened to the kingdom of heaven within us, and that therefore, to some extent, that in us which is of the kingdom of heaven can reflect the divine, and this in spite of the mortal, and this in spite of the mortal. So this is the tender message that we have the ability, that there is the ability within us that can reflect the divine, and that we don't have to think that Jesus had a better origin, and because of his better origin, he alone was able to reflect the divine. He had a better start in one way than we had, but only in a proportion, not fundamentally different. Only in a proportion he had a better start. But fundamentally, there is the kingdom of heaven within each one of us. And the more we culture that, the more we nurture that, the more that is taking hold of the human. And the human reflects then more and more the divine. You see, it's a gradual, gentle working out of the human proposition. But it is a working out, a gradual working out of the human proposition, not on the basis of improving the mortal, but only on the basis of culturing the faint inklings of the divine in us. Only the divine can unfold and can strengthen. But that divine may only be a slight motion in us, a slight inkling in us. And that's the textbook, the story of the textbook that comes and says, I take that little inkling, that little fire which is already lighted up, and I come through the subjects and through the chapters, through the whole textbook, and nurture that, and nurture that, that becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, until we come to the marriage feast in the chapter of Apocalypse. Then I gave you a few references to the fact that Mrs. Eddy shows that Jesus was the way, showing the way of atonement. Christ was the Spirit, which Jesus impelled in his own statement, I am the way, the truth, and the life. It is the Christ, really, that is the way. But Jesus came and exemplified the way, and so was the way shower. He wasn't really, the man Jesus wasn't really the way. Christ is the way. But the Christ in Jesus impelled him to exemplify the Christ to such an extent that Jesus exemplified or illustrated the way. That way which we have to go. So Jesus was the way shower. Born of a woman, Jesus' advent in the flesh partook partly of Mary's earthly condition, although he was endowed with the Christ, the divine spirit, without measure. See, she shows that so-called dual nature, perhaps I can, the twofold nature of Jesus. Partly he partook of Mary's earthly condition. On the other side, he was endowed with the Christ. And on account of that twofold nature, he was able to be the way shower, because his thought was fundamentally the same as of us. Fundamentally, we take part of our mother's earthly condition in its birth and education. But on the other side, each one of us can fall back to God, and therefore to the unity with God, to the Christ. So fundamentally, there is no difference between Jesus and us. There is only a gradual difference. Just as among us, there may be a gradual difference. And the chapter on marriage will show us how important, therefore, it is how to bring up children, so that children have proportionately a better start than if they are not brought up in the right spirit. This twofold nature, Mrs. Eddy goes on and says, this accounts for his struggles in Gethsemane and on Calvary, and this enabled him to be the mediator or way shower between God and men. Had his origin and birth been wholly apart from mortal usage, Jesus would not have been appreciable to mortal minds, as the way. He would have been appreciable to the divine mind as the way, but not to mortal mind. To mortal mind, the way is only perceptible if the divine is overcoming the human. And only in that way, mortal mind gives way and is convinced of its falsity and gives way and disappears. Jesus explored the way for us. I have a few references on that, just showing how Jesus explored the way for us. He didn't go the way for us. He was the big explorer. Jesus mapped out the path for others. That's why we have that affection and that gratitude for Jesus' work, that he for the first time stepped into that wilderness of mortal mind and trod a way and made a way through that wilderness which led to the Holy Land, to the realm of reality. And once a path is trodden, well, the followers can just go along that path. But the big thing is to find that path as the first, as a pioneer. Jesus was the way. That is, he marked the way for all men. And then there is a little note that there is no other way. We cannot choose for ourselves. Let us remember that through the whole chapter on Atonement and Eucharist. We cannot choose for ourselves, but must work out our salvation in the way Jesus taught. You see, just as in the chapter on prayer, we saw that there is only one prayer, one principle of prayer. That we can't just pray as we like to pray. That prayer is scientific, and the moment prayer is scientific, it has a principle, and has one principle, which is individualized, but that's another point. But it's one principle. And so it is with atonement. We can't atone with God in any way we like. She says quite clear there is only one way, and we cannot choose for ourselves. There is no choosing for ourselves. We just have to comply with that way which Jesus taught and which Jesus mapped out. There are not many ways to Rome. Do you have a saying, there are many ways to Rome? Yes? Well, there are not many ways to Rome in science. There are not many ways of atoning with God. There is only one way, again, the principle of atonement. There is no other. This is very comforting, because then we know the way, when it is mapped out, when it is shown. Then we are not at loss to think, well, will I find the way, and what way be the way? We know then the way, and that's what Jesus said. He said, well, I know the way, and you know the way, and so go the way. And the way leads to the Father. So inwardly in us, we must get rid of that sense that we can just float along in the way we think it is right to atone. That we think, every religion and every sect within each one of these religions has its own form of atonement. And we say so kindly, well, that's all good, it's all right. No, it isn't. In this case, we can't be tolerant with us. We can be very tolerant with the other and leave him his way and his life experience until he finds. But not with us. There is no tolerance in that way with us. There is only one principle, and we jolly well have to comply with the principle of atonement. We cannot choose for ourselves, Mrs. Eddy says. We cannot choose for ourselves. See, that's why this chapter seems to be so strict and so severe. Seems like drilling in the military service. We just can't budge out. But behind that drilling and that strictness is always love. And you will feel when you read the chapter through that always comes in the tone of love, in between, just picking us up and showing, well, you know, that's really love. Because the loveliest and tenderest thing is to know the direct way instead of the zigzag way. And to know the direct way, which is the shortest way, is a lovely way. Because it needs the less energy, it doesn't waste energy, doesn't waste time, it doesn't waste consecration. It is the most rational, loving way. And it is only a question of our inward attitude if we accept that strict way as the loving way and not as a dull or hard or burdensome way. It's in us. where the decision falls if it is love that leads us on or if it is just moral duty that drives us on. And if it is moral duty that drives us on in atonement, we will fail. We'll fail. Because only God can impel us. And when God impels us, and if it is love, capital L love, God as love, which impels us to go the way, we certainly will arrive at the goal. Now, I must stop here.